All right, it is Monday. It is great to be back with you. Welcome live to Drive Time. That breaking news, certainly for those of us of a certain era, alerting that Malcolm Jamal Warner has died. TMZ reporting that he drowned. But for me, that is like, it just takes me back to being a kid watching The Cosby Show. And obviously the impact of that show, I think, has been considered and maybe reconsidered in light of what we know about Bill Cosby today. But doesn't that hit you? There are certain celebrities, and maybe it's a certain age that is part of it, but there are certain names that come up and you think, like, it's not possible. It's not possible that Theo Huxtable is dead. This is absolute craziness. Seems from the reporting I've been reading that it was a drowning incident that happened while he was in Costa Rica. So whenever it's someone young, you always think, like, oh, was it drugs or was it something else? But tough stuff there. We begin here in the Twin Cities with the news that developed just this afternoon, and I cannot wait to hear what you guys think about this, because imagine being convicted of felony burglary as an elected official on a Friday, waiting all weekend to announce that you're leaving your gig, and then given 2-week notice. I mean, you cannot make it up. 2-week notice is like, if I get arrested, I don't expect that I'll be able to, like, do the show for another 2 weeks. Like, when I get arrested and the body cam video of me in a black skull cap with my flashlight and my crowbar, I feel like I have spent a lot of time on this radio station sharing my empathy for State Senator Nicole Mitchell. Her situation is, for me, a family situation that should have never progressed into the courtroom spectacle that it was. The reason it progressed this way is because Nicole Mitchell refused to take full responsibility, and she didn't step down from her position in the Senate, and she wanted to fight it, and she fought it, and she was convicted. So we're all waiting. We're like, well, she's going to step down, right? Like, the Senate is in recess. It doesn't come back in session until February. You think now's an easy time to step down, give people some time to decide they're going to run in Woodbury. It's a reliably, over the last several years anyway, it's been a reliably Democratic seat. So she'll step down. And early this morning, Blois Olson says, well, yeah, she's probably going to step down today. And sure enough, she did, but she gave 2 weeks notice. 2 weeks of notice. One more paycheck for Nicole Mitchell. I know she's not making huge money as a state senator, but my reaction to this is, A, what a load. B, the hubris to say, I need 2 weeks. 2 weeks? You've had a year and a half since you were arrested. Her lawyer was on KFGO radio, Dane Decree. And here was his explanation as to why she's giving 2 weeks. And just a fair warning, it's crazy.
She wants 2 weeks to finish her outstanding legislative out-of-session work.
Oh, stop right there. Hang on. Yeah, oh, naturally. Yeah, right? Like, I mean, I got a stack of legislative work. It's just piled up in the office. What? All right. Well, that's a good start. You're like, okay, good enough. Fine. What else?
some constituent service stuff.
Sure, the stuff. Yeah. We all have stuff. I got a stack of stuff to deal with. If I get arrested tonight.
Probably a lot of calls from constituents. She's got to return emails. Yeah. You know, I mean, right? People need stuff.
Yep. Yep. State senator stuff. Okay, what else?
She wants to help her staff find new employment.
Oh. That is so nice. Isn't that nice?
Because
it's not their fault that they are going to have new jobs because of a poor decision on her part.
Yeah.
Duh.
It's not their fault. Now, if you stuck in the office of State Senator Nicole Mitchell for the last year and a half, like...
It's an incredible display of loyalty.
Didn't you send out a resume? Like one or two? Maybe you're just... Like, I probably need a summer gig, right? Like... All right. So those are a couple. Was there anything else? That was it. In the memo they sent out. I mean, I love it. You got to come up with some reason. And it's her. She was elected.
No, no.
She doesn't have to leave.
No, you really don't have to come up with it. You can just do the right thing. You're allowed to just do the right thing. You don't have to do all the 2 weeks notice and all this kind of
hullabaloo. Well, but it's nice to try to find your people
just
a gig.
Do the right thing. You haven't done it in a year and a half. The court made its decision. Just do the right thing.
I mean, if she leaves on August 2nd, then, like, you don't have to pay for COBRA. You know what I mean? Like, so you get another month on the house insurance. So that was one of the reasons in the memo, in the press release they sent out, which, again, I am in favor of more communication, right? But, like... Sometimes saying nothing is the option. Like, and again, like, if any of you guys ever get in trouble, you can hire me to provide this sort of advice. My advice would be State Senator Nicole Mitchell will resign effective August 2nd. And I put those three, like, the... hashtags that people put at the end of it's pretty good. Now, we are getting text, as always, whenever we bring up the state senator, felon burglar, people bring up the felon president.
The what about, folks?
So I would say there is a difference. And if Nicole Mitchell wants to run for office again, I think... I have no problem with convicted felons being elected. It's not who I would necessarily vote for. But if people vote for someone with a convicted, with a felony on their conviction, then that's fine. People made the choice. They know what they were dealing with. It is quite different for me when you get arrested while you're in office. So let me explain it this way. When you get arrested for drunk driving and you are a state senator or a state representative, I think you should step down. I think you should step down. If you are a convicted drunk driver and you run for office and people know that and they vote for you, that is A-okay with me. Does that make sense? So for me, the what about Trump just doesn't fly for me. It doesn't. It's cute. It's a good, like, bazinga. I gotcha. But, like, to me, it's totally different. Lots of texts coming in. Really, you guys are very, did I say April 1st? She was going to resent, probably. April, August, whatever. Texters. Aw, Nicole is so loyal and devoted to her staff. Isn't that nice? Jason, why is it her prerogative to resign? Why isn't she automatically expelled? I do think that our state house and our state senate should look at that. Because right now, it's here's the problem. Generally speaking, hanging in there as long as possible and doubling down seems to be a rewarded behavior. You get to vote. especially in a divided legislature. You don't have hiccups of like, which, you know, are we losing our majority? Are we in a, and generally speaking, the person who should have resigned immediately and resigns later, nobody pays a price for this. So to me, saving your seat, not resigning, is always what people are going to do, which is why I think there should be some concrete standards. If you get arrested and charged, for me, if you get charged with anything greater than a gross misdemeanor, out. That would be my standard. I don't know where you're at. 651-461-9226. For me, that is the line. Now, there is an automatic, you get booted if you cannot vote. So if you are a felon serving time, you do not have the ability to vote, and thus you cannot be a senator. Does that make sense? So that's the only reason that you can really automatically get booted, as far as I can tell. Let's break. When we come back, a little bit of positive news from State Senator John Hoffman. For the first time, we're hearing from him after he, his wife, were both shot inside their Champlin home as part of a political assassination that continues to have reverberations here and around the country. We'll hear from State Senator John Hoffman in an interview he did today in just a minute. All right, let's let Jonathan chime in. Jonathan's on the CCO talk and text line, 651-461-9226. Happy Monday, Jonathan. 2 weeks notice. What do you think?
Okay, good afternoon, my friend. First off, Minneapolis and Minnesota is so backwards, it's unbelievable that she was nerved to say, I'm giving you a 2 weeks notice, but okay, well, I got convicted as a felon, so I'm going to stick around just a little bit longer to make everybody's lives a little bit more miserable and realize that I did what I did, and oh my goodness.
Well, she has a lot of work. There's a lot of work still she has to do.
I'm calling. I won't say what I want to say. I'm a fan, and I'm telling you, I mean, between that and the mayor race with the new guy that just got the DFL endorsement.
Yeah, Omar Fateh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, what is happening between her and him and Jacob Frey and the governor not knowing what the hell heck he's doing? Just call it a day. I mean, honest to God, I've gotten to the point where I feel like I need to move from this great state that I love. If the people that are running for the cities don't get it together, there will be nothing left of this city.
Jonathan.
And that's the way I truly feel.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. We have, you know, I just see it as content. Like, it's just, we have plenty of material. And in fact, one of the candidates for mayor of Minneapolis, Jazz Hampton, is going to join us in about 10 minutes. So he was there during the DFL convention this weekend. And we'll talk to Jazz about some of the chaos, what he thinks, if he thinks the results are legit, and what message he thinks, if anything, is this just the biggest advocates sounding off, or is there a bigger message here? So we'll talk to Jazz in about 10 minutes. I want you guys to hear this because John and Yvette Hoffman, just absolute, I think, heroes. In that awful Saturday early morning where we had a deranged, politically motivated assassin on the loose in the northern suburbs, where he started in Champlin. So he's in Champlin, he's in Maple Grove, he's in New Hope, and then in Brooklyn Park, where he killed Melissa and Mark Hortman. Before that happened, though, it was State Senator John Hoffman and Yvette Hoffman and their daughter coming to the door. Al Travis is a radio host, YouTube stream, and he had the first interview with John Hoffman today.
Oops, you know, she's okay. She's doing well. She's you know,
all things.
She was, you know, yeah. Her night, you know, when she when she dialed 911, she was a hero, man. She, you know, there's people alive because of how she said, you know, something on 911 that was just, but she was, you know, very much in charge. So grateful for her, big time. So, but you know, it's tough.
John Hoffman is a regular guest on the Al Travis show, and Al is a conservative talk host, and he hosts from his basement in Blue Earth. But he, John Hoffman, who is a Democrat, DFLer, is on Al's show every week. So kind of cool. I think it's pretty amazing. You know, is that a great? Is that a great place to do the first interview? I think yes. What Al is trying to do, I think, is fantastic. And the fact that John Hoffman, you know, he could have done a national interview. All the national media wanted to talk to him. Everybody. I want to talk to him. But talking about his daughter, Hope, who was the one who called 911 and was able to give the information that it was at a state senator's house, getting the ball rolling early to know that this was politically motivated, or potentially at that point. I don't know if they fully understood it, but pretty significant and quite miraculous that he's alive to be able to talk to somebody today. He was shot multiple times, as was his wife, Yvette, who is out of the hospital. He's in rehab. But just thinking about the Hoffmans a lot and hearing that today, I think was pretty cool. 329, DFL convention. You know, I go two ways on this week. It was chaotic. It was expected to be chaotic. It is stupid that a party endorsement that carries weight is settled in such a chaotic way all the time. The Republicans have very chaotic nominating conventions as well. I wish we would be done with this bit and just go to a primary and let people talk without the parties weighing in, because the way it's done is so silly. But I think there was a pretty clear message sent, at least from the activists who spent their day at the DFL convention in downtown Minneapolis. And we'll talk with one of the candidates for mayor, Jazz Hampton. He joins us next here on CCO. DFL activists gathered in downtown Minneapolis over the weekend, and all of the headlines coming out of the convention talk about a chaotic scene, a long day, trouble with an electronic vote counting website, a last minute kind of rush to get a party endorsement done. The bottom line for me is that, and there already has been a complaint filed to try to invalidate the results from a former state DFL party chair, Mike Erlandson. Mayor Jacob Frey and his campaign has been talking about how maybe there wasn't a quorum and on and on and on. One of the candidates who was there is Jazz Hampton. He is with us right now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Jazz, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And thanks for having the discussion as well. It's important stuff.
You know, I don't want to dwell on the sort of inside baseball problems that there were at the convention and getting this done, but I do want to give you a chance to say whether or not you think or you trust the results in that first round of voting. The complaint has been raised that there were way more people eligible to vote than the number of votes that were counted, and emails were going into spam and all of these issues. Do you think it was a legitimate vote?
I think the first thing to point out is it's a vast amount of volunteers that are giving their time to do the process, which I deeply appreciate. And I think that there's a lot of people there that are giving their time to be delegates. And I appreciate all of the work that they do. And I think questions have been raised, and I think some of them are legitimate questions. But to me personally, my focus isn't about divisive arguments over specifics of the process that happened this weekend. It's about talking to the 99.9% of voters that were not present that still want to learn about the candidates that were there. And I think all of the other fighting is going to be taken care of, whether it's through complaints or otherwise.
You got about 4% of the vote of the people who were there. when you add up all of the votes in that first round, the incumbent mayor, Jacob Frey, got about 31.5%. Now, we're only talking about fewer than 600 votes, right? So we talk about this as if it's a but this is how it's done. This is how the parties do their thing. And to me, the takeaway is that the people who showed up are overwhelmingly against the current mayor, Jacob Frey. Is that your takeaway?
Yeah, and whether it's against an individual or just a yearning for change, what I believe is Minneapolis is truly looking for a new chapter for the city, someone that's bringing optimism and excitement and a plan for and a vision forward that the city agrees with. And I do think people are looking for that right now in this moment. And I think the numbers, like you said, only 577 in the first vote. But if they're representative generally, I think people are looking for just a fresh chapter in the city.
What, when you look at this kind of tradition of having an endorsement, and the Republicans have had chaos when they've had endorsement conventions on, this is not like, you know, one party has a monopoly on a goofy sort of process. But should this process go away? Should we still have parties doing endorsements?
I think it's really important for people to be able to come together collectively, especially in a moment of excitement, people who are really engaged to say, we're excited about this person or we're excited about this platform. I think that is valuable, but I think at a certain point, the extent of the value is just letting people know how a group of folks is feeling in that moment. It's not a crowning ceremony. This isn't a primary with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of voters. But of course, I always want to support people coming together and say, as a group, that has common ideals, this is a person that we're leaning towards or we think that you should look at. I think there's value in that. But beyond that, you know, I don't know how much further you can take the value of that process.
Jazz Hampton is running for mayor of Minneapolis on the DFL side. He was part of the party convention this weekend. You know, you're new to politics. You're a founder of a tech company. You're a dad in Minneapolis and a husband. And I wonder how you assess, you know, look, I wouldn't be thrilled with 4%. Got to be honest. How are you doing? Yeah. How do you, you know, but you also have to be realistic that you're new to this process. How do you assess how things went?
Yeah, I think, again, I think it spoke to the fact that we're looking for a new leadership in Minneapolis. And you know, the delegates that were selected, it was selected previously at a caucus process. And I just entered the race at that point. So even the delegates that were chosen several months ago, I wasn't familiar with too many of those folks. And so actually at the convention was the first time a lot of them had an opportunity to learn about our campaign and what we're standing for. And we've heard overwhelmingly positive things coming out of that as well. And so I'm excited about that. And listen, again, 577 folks in that first vote were counted. But what we know going forward is there's 430,000 plus folks in this city, and they're really looking forward to someone that can be that champion. And I believe that I can be that person, and I will be in November.
Jazz Hampton is with us. How are you different from the incumbent mayor, Jacob Frey?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is I'm trying to put people over politics and in that way, trying to stop all of the fighting that's occurring. I think too often we're opening the newspaper and seeing leaders of the city talking about each other rather than the policies that we're really longing to have pushed forward in this city, ensuring that public safety is present for everyone in the way that we hope that it is, ensuring that everyone has an affordable and consistent place to sleep, and that economically the city is doing really well so that property taxes don't continue to go up on individual owners. Focusing in on that starts with having really good relationships with the other leaders in the city, one that's rooted in we might disagree, and you can't possibly agree with all 13 city council members, but you can say, I will actually come to the table and sit down with you, and I look forward to doing that with each and every one of them. That's why I've already reached out to the vast majority or met with them already.
How do you see your approach different or your policy views differently when you compare yourself to who I suppose now would be considered the front runner, State Senator Omar Fateh? How are you different from him?
You know, I think Omar, Senator Fateh, has a lot of wonderful things about him and the campaign that he's running. And one of the things that I think other people will point out is Omar Fateh is endorsed by the DSA, and a lot of our city council members are as well, or at least a handful of them.
The social Democratic Socialist Party here in Minneapolis, right?
Look at that! I've been a politician for a short time, and already using.
I know you're doing acronyms already.
Yes, and so I am not, and I haven't sought that endorsement. But here's the thing that's important: what I am seeking is sitting down with those city council members that represent wards that are different than their colleagues, and they're bringing real viewpoints from them. And it's my job to sit down with them and say, how can we get this work done together? Because I truly believe we can move the city forward collectively, even if we have differing opinions.
So do you see yourself stylistically, you're different from these two? Is it policy? I mean, if we put you on a horizon, are you somewhere politically in between where Jacob Fry is and where State Senator Fateh is?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes down to individual issues, and I think people in this election would say that they are on two opposite ends of the spectrum, so the vast majority of people would be in between them. But this is what I know. I am willing to come to the table and have the conversation with people, whether they are very closely aligned with the mayor or very closely aligned with Senator Fateh. And what I truly believe is that's what the city needs right now. We don't need to be in our own camps with our ideologies leading the way. What we need to be doing is centering the voices of the residents and actually hearing what they want and need in this moment.
Would you handle homeless encampments differently than the way the mayor and the current administration has?
Yeah, I've been on the board of Catholic Charities for almost 5 years. I've seen this issue firsthand. And you know, the word that's often used is sweeps. And what I believe we need to be doing is placing folks in housing solutions immediately and having wraparound services there in proximity. If you're bringing someone to a housing solution in North Minneapolis, but the Narcan is off Hiawatha and the mental health services they have are in Southwest Minneapolis, it's not going to be successful. So, yes, I want to ensure that encampments, because at the end of the day, those are individuals who are sleeping outside, and we need to bring them to a place where they can be comfortable and safe inside and do that in a way that's productive and not just moving them to another location. But we need to do it in an expedited way for sure.
Jazz Hampton is our guest. You put out a message congratulating State Senator Fateh on earning that endorsement. We still don't know if Mayor Fry's campaign specifically is going to challenge the endorsement. Is your view that this endorsement is legitimate?
Yeah, I congratulate him because at the end of the day, the gavel was banged and they named him as the person that was endorsed by the party. And I think he and his supporters put in a lot of work to receive the endorsement that day. You know, I'm a courtroom lawyer, and I know that things can be flipped on appeal and things might change. But as of now, that is the case, right? And until then, he is the person that is endorsed. But I know there are, like I said, I'm so grateful to everyone who gave their time at the process, an entire 12 hours of a day. My kids only lasted about half of that. But I appreciate their time, and whatever the results are from any appeal, I'll also respect that as well.
Yeah. All right, Jazz Hampton, we appreciate the time. We'll talk more during the campaign, but thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
All right, Jazz Hampton. You know, it is... If you were someone interested in showing up at a convention, I don't know that taking one vote after 8 hours makes you feel real good about it. But some of this, to me, feels like what I hear when someone on social media today told me that this is sort of the bickering about it is sort of like listening to people talking about their fantasy football teams, where it's a lot of wah, 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 and you're like, I don't know. Like, am I surprised that DFL activist picked the socialist endorsed candidate? No. Am I surprised that the overwhelming percentage of people there who voted, supposedly, voted against Jacob Fry? Also, no. Does this mean anything? I don't know. What will the voters do? What will ranked choice voting do? Because the three candidates who are running against the incumbent mayor have been using a strategy that has been effective in other cities, where you say, don't rank the incumbent. And that gives the challengers more of a shot. Is that what? Well, I don't live here, so it's your choice. You guys vote how you want. But it is an interesting choice, to say the least. 3:48. We are back in just a minute with the most important issue in America, according to the President of the United States. Back in a sec. Football team names. That's what the president's worried about right now. President Trump. You don't think he's trying to distract us from the Epstein stuff, do you? I can't imagine that our great president would do such a thing. The Washington whatever should immediately change their name back. The Washington Redskins football team. There's a big clamoring for this. Likewise, the Cleveland Indians, one of the six original baseball teams with a storied past. A great Indian people in massive numbers want this to happen. Their heritage and prestige is systematically being taken away from them. Times are different now from them they were 3 or 4 years ago. We're a country of passion and common sense. And then that one went so well, that post went so well on True Social, that truth. Then the president said he was going to hold up a, well, he never says he would. I may. I don't know what I'm going to do. I may put a restriction on them that if they don't change the name back to the original Washington Redskins, I won't make a deal for them to build a stadium in Washington. The obsession over team nicknames will never, ever cease to amaze me. I went to Marquette University, which I was one part Warrior, three parts Golden Eagle.
Okay.
And every couple of years, some rich alum says, I'm going to donate $10 million to the school.
If
you change it back.
Right.
And they always say, well, they talked about it. They actually once, because $10 million is
a lot of money. It's not nothing.
Once they did like a whole process of changing the name and they landed on the gold. And people were so mad. Yeah, they were like, never mind. We'll stick with Golden Eagles. I do think the nickname thing is silly. And you should not have a team named after a slur. The Redskins is a slur.
Like dictionary defined as such.
You wouldn't have like the Minnesota Honkies. Like we're not doing that.
No.
So like, come on. Now the Indians, I think you might have a case to keep the name if your mascot wasn't like a comically racist looking Indian. So this is just classic distraction, right? Yeah, like the right 100%. Was coming for Trump. He doesn't want to talk about Epstein. And so here we go.
He tried the Rosie O'Donnell, I'm going to revoke her citizenship. That didn't work. Now he's moving on to the Washington football team. And of course, the Harvard thing in court today is another one that he's going to get all over because anything to try and, because he understands, look, give the president credit. He understands the media. He understands how the news cycle works. And he's a master at manipulating it. And that's exactly what he's trying to do here.
Well, we can't help ourselves. You're like, oh, give me something new. Give me. And he gives and gives and gives. I still want to see the Epstein files. I like my government to tell the truth and be transparent. And so let's go.